It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR1 stations statewide, online at hawaiipublicradio.org every Friday. Part of All Things Considered, we put the spotlight on an organization, topic, event that helps out the disabled and others who are among the most vulnerable in our community here in the Aloha State. And I'm Dave Lawrence. This week we're learning about PACT Hawaii. Privileged to have this returning guest, Parents and Children Together Hawaii Family Service Agency. And among the services the group provides, some very serious things for folks in need in the islands, addressing domestic violence, group counseling for domestic violence batterers, victims, child witnesses. And we're going to learn about PACT Hawaii with both a returning guest and a new guest. On the returning front, Senior VP of Programs Ha'aheo Mansfield, and on our new guest front, President and CEO Ryan Kusumoto. Ryan, Ha'aheo, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
I appreciate having you here. You're quite welcome, and welcome back for you. Great to see you again. Hard stuff that you guys tackle in the community. Folks who really are in crisis. And I think about some of the kinds of crisis that we talk about on Helping Hand, and being physically abused or something like that is about as bad as it can get. Before we dial in on specific areas for more details, for folks who don't know about your mission, either of you or both of you, trying to paint a picture for people out there who probably could use your service or might know somebody who's had some trouble, if you can describe how PACT could be of service.
Well, our mission is, you know, to paraphrase it, is to support the success of children, support healthy families, and build strong communities. And we serve over 13,000 people annually, and we kind of break up our work into five different areas, one being domestic violence prevention and treatment, another area being child abuse prevention and treatment. We do behavioral health services, we do community building, and we also do early education.
Behavioral health services, what is that? It's a new one, huh?
Those are mental health supports to families and young adolescents. And we have two evidence-based models that we use, multisystemic therapy, which is 24/7, and functional family therapy, which requires all of the family participate together in services.
And the 24/7 would be a residential program of some kind?
No, actually it's not. It's our therapists, it's home-based services typically, and our therapists are available to families 24/7. And of course, an integral part of that is to teach the family what an emergency is.
Right. And there are a lot of different kinds of emergencies that come up in the home on the kinds of things that you tackle. There's a few areas before we do, or the early childhood education, which is an important thing that seems to be on a lot of people's mind. I don't have a child, but I hear it more and more, and I understand the concept of if you start something really early, they've discovered it can have huge impact later on.
Huge impact.
Talk about how you guys are working in that area.
Well, you know, part of our early start is through our screening program. So we have a special screening program where we go out into the community and screen children who may not be enrolled in our services for potential developmental disabilities. Mm. They may have a hearing impaired. They may have a sight impairment that their families are not aware of. And so we do these screenings through the Farrington and McKinley Complex. And we set up in different community fairs, and it's free. It's free to families. We also have arrangements with preschools where we go in and we will screen students in the preschools. And that's to get there quicker, to learn about what their special needs may be before it's too late.
And so this is, what, a huge change from when we were kids? They just didn't, is this not how it was?
It's a huge change, yes. For the better.
Right, obviously.
Yeah.
It's just hard to imagine, you know, how it was, I guess, looking for the signs of these things has become a bigger deal than.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it's important, as Ha'aheo mentioned, that, you know, the first 1,000 days of a child's life is so critical to the development and for future learning opportunities. And so by getting in there early and helping to identify any potential issues that individual might have really helps to provide success for that individual moving forward. We also provide early education preschools here on Oahu as well as on the big Hawaii Island. And we have about 1,000 children each year that we provide that educational experience for. And, you know, again, it's that opportunity for children at a very young age to be prepared and get ready for kindergarten and the school system. And we, you know, the thing is that the need is large. We provide free education to these families who otherwise couldn't afford it. And we have a long waiting list
to get into the program. Yeah, I was going to say, these are folks who definitely otherwise couldn't take advantage of something like that. On the kid front, and moving into darker territory, for lack of a better word, child abuse and neglect prevention and treatment, there have been just some frightening examples of child abuse that I guess happened prior to getting to know your organization for me, but I guess the case of the Talia Williams thing that played out and the way that it just makes you rethink a lot, you know, is, of stuff about people who are vulnerable, people who, animals, people who just can't speak up for themselves. You know, at five, you can't, I don't know, at five, I couldn't imagine at five being able to even reach out to an authority to know what to do.
Yeah, and I think it's, the child is vulnerable, but the parents are vulnerable too. You know, they're doing and what their mind is, what they know to do, you know? So we got to reach the entire family. You know, we have to reach the entire family by teaching and coaching appropriate parenting, because we don't have enough space to remove all children
right.
from their families. We've got to build the skills of their families. We've got to build that. And that takes generations to build on.
So I guess what you're saying, I mean, that's a really good point. And you'll correct me if I'm interpreting this wrong, that it's not just about getting, I mean, when you get to the kid and they're in Talia's thing, it's almost, you know, you're getting it too late, if anything, to help. What you're saying is to try to change the behaviors of folks who are with these kids, and by you're nipping it in the bud, for lack of a better, you know, to use a cliche or something.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, our families in our communities are facing a lot of stresses, and that builds upon the issues that play into the dynamics of the household, which could lead to the situations, you know, you're talking about. And absolutely, the ability to get in there early and provide, you know, those positive parenting skills and some of those prevention measures that Hale mentioned are absolutely critical. I mean, you mentioned the Talia case, but there's another one, you know, the Peter Boy Kema one is another one that a lot of people know and think about. And you just think that, are there things that we all could have done in our communities and our families to, you know, prevent some of those things from happening? And I think that's a big part of it, is really getting in there and providing those good models of support for our families.
So you guys are sort of, one of the things I mentioned, you have counseling for batterers, and for, if you can, talk about what, you know, the hands-on way you're sort of tackling this and the things that maybe people might be surprised or that they just don't know that you're doing to implement a more positive role model for these cats to follow.
Thank you for that question. Most of our batterers come to us, they're referred to us by the family court. And so they're required to come into class. And our class are group situations. So each week they report in on how well they did the past week.
In their general behavior?
Yes. What did they do with their family to promote peace and wellness? How did they intervene with their children? How did they parent? How did they engage and interact with their spouse, with their partner? And so every week there's that review as well as a curriculum. And we are the only domestic violence provider that has all services under one roof. In other words, we provide services to batterers, to survivors of domestic violence, to child witness of domestic violence, to teen dating violence.
So do you get a fair number of referrals from the courts and from government agencies that are beyond just batterers? There are other sorts of clients that are sent to you or advised to check in with PACT, meaning families who suffer from the violence, you know, the women and the children, or other situations where the courts refer the people to you? Or how? Oh, I'm trying to figure out if there's, besides batterers, other people that are referred through the court system to PACT.
Thanks. Other people are referred to us, however, not necessarily through the court system.
Okay.
We currently receive referrals from Child Welfare Services through the Department of Human Services.
Okay.
For those families who are have child abuse and neglect, as well as domestic violence.
I get you. Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yes.
I was using the wrong term. It's not just court. What I was using that for a euphemism or whatever, symbolically for all governmental things. So you get referred through other governmental agencies.
Yes.
To help their clients with this. And the domestic violence prevention and treatment as a separate matter, moving from children to, because I know there's also a fair degree, in addition to kids who are getting beaten on and you trying to assist in remodeling the batterers, there's also like women in it, right? I mean, that's another
survivors.
Facet
so
that,
yes.
that is just, it doesn't always have to be a woman with a kid, is what I guess I'm saying.
That's right. We also provide parenting for batterers because we know most often than not, families return to their batterers.
Okay. Explain that a little more.
typically, when a woman gets ready to leave the battering situation, that's when she's most at risk for her life. Okay. That's when many women die. And once she makes a decision and he observes behavior, flight behavior, if you will.
Right. Once he sees she's getting ready to take serious action to stop being abused is when he may potentially ramp the abuse up so bad it kills her.
Yes, absolutely. So, tell me that question again, please.
I was just thinking about the ways that you guys are trying to help out women in general and the services that are available just for women.
Okay.
Because there are, well, I do the show that I do most of the time is this afternoon news. It's like a news magazine. And on it, we talk about the stuff I talk about is local news stories. And there are a lot of situations, you know, that don't necessarily, we've talked about the kids, but just women. I see horrible stuff. I've seen police, you know, videotapes of a police officer throwing a woman around. I mean, it's hard for me because I look at those kind of people to be role models for me. That's the last thing I would ever expect to see happen, no matter what. Even if you're having an argument about anything, I just wouldn't expect that a mall security camera is going to capture a cop that I might theoretically have called 911 someday to help me with throwing a lady around. So on behalf of all the women who this might happen to in different situations, and they need help, and they're alone, and they don't know who to turn to, and I've got these two responsible people here, the stuff that you can do just for these women, if we can lay that out there.
Sure. Once she decides to leave, again, that's the most dangerous time for
right.
her, and she actually makes that, she leaves, okay? We are there. She can remain, and we're still there. She decides to leave. That's not our decision to make. That's really important. She has to make that decision. Oftentimes, we find her returning to the batterer's home. And a lot of time, it's because of economics.
Right. There's nowhere else to go.
Can't afford rent.
Right.
Not in Hawaii. Not by herself. Okay. Can't afford rent. Even with those women who come from wealthy families, oftentimes the batterer has put so much control over those resources, she can't get to the bank account.
Right.
Her cards are canceled. So she has no financial ability to make her way in the community. Can't do it. And so we have shelters. And, of course, there are limited shelters. Most not-for-profit here in Hawaii who do this work have shelters. There's often not enough space for everyone. Okay? But so once she decides to leave, there's the likelihood that she will return, primarily for economic reasons. Although we've had sizable number of women say that there's a great deal of aloha and love for this man, in spite of having put her life on the line, in spite of that. And so that's why we put so much focus on the batterer.
To change this behavior so it stops, and because they have this huge paralyzing influence on these people, is what you're saying.
That's right, and she will return.
Right.
And most likely, if they have children, she will take them back there with her.
Right. That probably is a more influencing return factor, too, huh? The kids to
yes.
returning to.
Yes.
You got to say something?
Yeah. Well, I think, Hahale presents and describes situations for are survivors that it's really complicated. And many of the, there are many different scenarios under which our survivors are facing, where, you know, Hale mentioned socioeconomic type issues of why they don't leave, or fear for their children, or, you know, various other things. And I think one message that, you know, we want to get out to folks is if they are in a situation like this, that, you know, to reach out to someone. And it might not be to PACT or an agency, but reach out to someone that they trust and they can talk to this, you know, this issue about.
What if they don't have anybody in their life
then
they trust?
Then they got to call you. Then they can call us.
Yeah.
And they can call us, and we can help navigate some of those matters with them, together with them.
I kind of think when you're, especially what you're talking, what Ha'ahel was talking about really hit home. The fact that these people have such, the batterer, the person could have so many, could shut all the doors for this person. So when it comes to needing someone to talk to, they really do potentially. And it's a small island. I mean, it's a small place to live. You know, you feel like, who am I going to talk to that this isn't going to, you know, so I could, you know, that's why I think it's important that people realize what you're saying, Ryan, is that, you know, if you're in one of these situations and you do need someone to trust and you're not sure you can trust the folks that you already know, that's why you're here, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And I wanted to take it one step further, too. You know, we as individuals, as citizens, as family members, as friends, you know, we all have a responsibility to also act. I mean, if we see someone in our lives, someone that we know that is going through something, you know, this is not something you turn away from.
Right.
This is not, you know, when you are at a party and you see someone who's had too much to drink, you're going to say something and stop them from driving. And you're at the airport and you see something suspicious, they tell you to say something and speak up. This is no different. You see someone going through a situation of domestic violence, we have a responsibility to act. And that's oftentimes not easy to do. But if we don't, I mean, what we end up doing is, you know, what ends up happening is, you know, 1 in 3 women every day in the United States are killed because of domestic violence. And, you know, and then when that happens, we hold vigils, we do walks, and we, you know, we mourn the our loved ones. But we all step back and say, we probably could have done something about that. And I think that's our responsibility, and we need to do it. October this past year was Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and the community came out and tried to support. But it's really something we need to do every day of the year. 1 in 4 women in our lifetime are going to be impacted by domestic violence. We see about 15 new people every day in our programs in Hawaii, and that's just us. And there are many
that's
other
across the state.
No, that's just us.
There's in Honolulu only.
Across the state, sorry.
Okay.
But there are other providers across the state that are also seeing as much or more, maybe, folks who are dealing with this issue.
Yeah, that's a. And there's a lot of people that doesn't get on the radar because of, again, what Ha'ahea was saying, the fear of retribution.
Absolutely.
for lack of a better way to put it. When you're talking about the community getting involved, opportunities for people to volunteer, are there things that, as we turn to ways that you could get supported, whether it's cash, whether it's people who could be on your board? I wrote down a need for space because it sounded like when it came to domestic violence survivors that you were looking for space for people. And I don't want to put needs ahead of other needs that you may have. You're running the organization, and I have maximum respect for that. But in terms of volunteer opportunities and other ways that folks could assist you, can we talk about that?
Well, space is, you know, always an issue for every nonprofit and us as well. And we talk about the capacity to make sure that we have the facilities and space to help our folks in need. So we do need that. And that is absolutely critical. But we also need, you know, we do need the funding to support those individuals in those spaces. We are heavily government funded, but oftentimes that's not enough, and we need to find other ways to support, you know, our clients who have very unique needs.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it might not be just shelter that they need, but they need some access to transportation, to their jobs, support for their children, and oftentimes that's not covered within, you know, a contract. You know, we also need help in building awareness, as I mentioned. You know, this, you know, it's helping us get out there and speaking about these issues. And there's many events that we have, and you can go to our website, pacthawaii.org, to find those events. And we need people who are going to be, you know, help us be passionate about these issues and share the word that we can't be quiet about these events. And that awareness is actually very huge for us, because bringing awareness helps put an end to some of these issues for us. And then we have some other very fun type events, you know, as well. We got our early education preschools. We have what's called Read Along Wednesdays, and we have opportunities for community members to come out and read to our kids. It's on Wednesdays, and it's usually around 10:30, and you can just sign up, go to our website as well, and if you want to engage in that and read a children's book to them.
Where's the facility?
We have a number of different facilities. Okay. We have right in Kalihi. Majority of our preschools are located in Kalihi. We also have it on Big Island as well, and the Hawaii Island, where you can we'll find a place, one of the preschools, and give you
how
the
long?
Opportunity. It's one book long.
Read a book.
Yeah.
A kid's book. Okay.
It's a great way to interact with the kids. And actually, you know, that's the best part of my day, is oftentimes, you know, you're having those tough, long days, and going down there and reconnecting with the little ones always makes you remember, you know, why we do what we do. So,
yeah, no, I like that. That's a good, that's a great story.
And, you know, if you're feeling shy, we do have, every year, we do a friend raiser, and that's Keiki Day, where we sell newspapers on the street corner. Mm. So if you want to stand there with a bunch of papers, volunteer for that, we'd welcome you.
You have a variety of methods.
Yes.
Is what you're pointing out. Folks can reach you guys, and there are, when you go to pacthawaii.org, there are a lot of phone numbers. And if you're feeling intimidated by the variety of phone numbers, I learned that you could call 808-847-3285, and they will help you sort out where you want to go. admin@pacthawaii.org is the email address, and equally useful in terms of getting you to where you need to go, correct?
If yes.
Someone wants to use that. @hawaiipublicradio.org, we have the full interview, the radio feature, all their contact information, and all of our other helping guests waiting for you. Are there other things that I need to cover that you want to get in there? Please, by all means.
Nope.
Feel good?
Yep.
Ha'aheo Mansfield, Senior VP of Programs. Ryan Kusumoto, President and CEO. It's Pact Hawaii, the Family Peace Center, and I really do appreciate seeing you again, meeting you, and thank you very much for helping out all those folks. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much.